call the Senate Health, Education, and Social Service Committee to order. Let the record show that Senator Curtola, Josephson, Alfred, Jones, and Fisher are in attendance. Today before us, we have continuing SB 119. It's not the intention of the chair to bring it out of committee today, but instead is to hear from the various folks who are in from out of town to get their comments on the bill, and then if time still permits, to address possible amendments to the bill. There are some concerns that people say, why don't we do this or why don't we do that? And I think before we do it as a committee, it would be nice to hear, if we did do this, what happens to the bill itself or the structure that we're going, that we're now considering. So what we can do, and I know some people have come long distances for other meetings, but we'll go with those folks first before we do anything else. I assume everybody has a copy of the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Curtola.
It's my understanding that you'd prefer to have amendments offered, but no attempt to adopt them this particular session. Is that correct?
Yes.
And this modest explanation, I see some deletions here. Are they inaccurate statements or what? Why are they deleted?
I don't know what you're looking at. Go to the front page. I think that is your...
Yes, mine.
Yeah, that... I guess what it is, it didn't pick up the yellow.
Okay, yeah.
There is no deletions. A machine picks up yellow, I guess it's black. So that's the problem we have.
So the key things we're supposed to read are
black. I tried to do it so you folks would have something. So I guess the things that I felt something we should look at is blacking out. So, but we have another copy that we can work with.
Sure.
We may not even get to
that. Light underlining.
Yeah, okay. Okay, when you come up to testify, would you just please give your name and where you're from? Okay, we have Nancy Gross.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Joseph.
I'd like to submit to the chair then for, are we going to testify?
No.
To the chairman for later consideration, my amendments to SB 119, changing 35% to 30%, dealing with the carryover funds problems in district with local effort, and providing how local effort is measured. And those follow recommendations from the Anchorage School District.
Okay, I think what we'll do is I'll make a compilation of these. We'll number them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then we can address these at the next meeting one at a time.
Thank you.
Sure.
This one is offered by Petula, Cato, and Zemanski, addressing a specific concern of ours. Not that we don't have others.
No, there's other amendments too. Senator Coggle has a couple concerns, and I was hoping that after we get done with the explanations, maybe some of them might be dropped out, or he may not even want to continue with it. Okay, Nancy.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Nancy Gross. I'm the city manager for the city of Onalaska, which is in the Aleutians. And I guess I have two hats on today. One is speaking directly on behalf of the city of Onalaska. The other is speaking as a representative of the Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference. This is an organization of local government entities that encompass all of Senator Zeroff's Senate district. We had a meeting in Dillingham the 28th of February and the 1st of March and discussed these bills. We, at that time, passed a resolution. I'm sorry, I don't have a copy of the entire resolution to give you, but I will send it down. The now, therefore, be it resolved, in the resolution have to do with placing a floor on the school debt reimbursement, which is not a part of this bill, but it is a part of the local obligation for schools. We built our schools under a 90% reimbursement formula. It's down to 80%. How much further is it going to go? That reimbursement amount, or the non-reimbursed percent, comes from the local people. So we'd like to see some sort of a floor and set maybe at 80% with a total of not more than 1 mil. We would like to see a phase-in of the requirement for local participation in the transportation. And we'd like to see that capped at 20%. We would like to see a phase-in of the TRS participation by the local government over a four-year period. We would like to see the state to define the basic education that they are giving X dollars for, so that I understand that this bill is an attempt to find equity for school districts across the state. I think you can find equity by stating what the basic education will cover, and then the local districts can fund a percentage of that, plus other things that the state does not consider are basic. We would, or the Southwest Conference would, encourage the phasing in of the four-mill equivalent at the rate of 1 mill a year. We would encourage separate funding for community education, which is an important part of the educational process, but yet is not, in most places, considered to be basic education. The Senate Bill 2 was also supported in this resolution. The idea of knowing a year ahead of time what the schools were going to have was a very positive step. And we would recommend that the hold harmless, the transition amount, be set at no more than 5% of FY87 dollars with an adjustment for fall enrollment. On behalf of the City of Onalaska, now that finishes the Southwest Conference. On behalf of the City of Onalaska, I need to tell you that for our city to increase immediately 4 mills for schools is going to be devastating. We now pay 12 mills on a tax base of about $100 million. For those taxpayers, and many of them are homeowners, small business owners, people who are in small businesses supporting the fishing industry, would just put us under. It is just a dreadful burden. And 4 mills for us would not even reach the 35%. 4 mills for us would be $382,000, and 35% is over $500,000. We are presently contributing about $1.5 million, and that's about what we can do. We know that we're going to be cut in state revenue sharing. We know that we're going to be cut in municipal assistance. There are already, the troopers are away quite often. We have to cover for the troopers. There's just a lot of responsibility for local governments. And I know you have an impossible task. But I just hope that you can find some way to relate the tax rate to the tax base and the burden that presently exists on those tax bases in small rural cities. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I have one for your 12 mills. That's not just for schools.
No.
Okay, so you have.
No, there's 1.5 mills for schools. The rest of it is for basic services. We have no state maintained roads. We do all our own public safety. We have medevacs that we have to send our people out into the Bering Sea to take injured people off fishing vessels. All of this we see as something that the state could well participate in, but the state has never chosen to. And we have done it because it's needed to be done. And now we really see ourselves getting zapped.
Ms. Senator Toll.
Well, I see 119 as having some light in it, certainly an attempt now at equity. When we gave the $400,000 to this study, in my opinion, we never intended it to only affect the subject matter that the bill affects. I think pupil transportation, debt service, and teacher's retirement, of course, is a new kicker. But those very problems that you addressed are the ones that I wrote down, too. So I suspect that we're going to all be very concerned about total cost of delivery, not just one aspect of it, even though it's a significant aspect of your. What you had to say certainly parallels the experiences of the area that I represent. And I have had no exact communication from them on the subjects that you had, but I certainly have the experience. I relate to what you have said.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you. I don't see any other legislators out there, but if there are, please come up to join us. We have Representative Betty Cato from, what's your district, Betty?
Six.
Number six.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Harry Purdy.
Good afternoon, Chairman, Senator Fisher, and Senators, and Representative Cato. My name is Harry Purdy. I'm from Galena, Alaska. I'm here, however, representing the Association of the School Administrators. Over the last 3 to 4 weeks, we've spent a great deal of time in three different meetings discussing Senate Bill 119. As you may be aware, over the years, the superintendents have not always agreed 100% on the bills that have been passed relative to foundation funding. I doubt that you're going to find 100% agreement at this point. However, individual superintendents in these various districts certainly have specific and unique areas of the bill that they're concerned about. It's our feeling, however, that this funding bill has proposed is one of the better ones in recent years, and we, at this point, speak in favor of its passage. We feel it speaks to PL 874, the disparity test, much more comprehensively, however, than it does the equity issue. It's our feeling that the area differentials are a delicate part of the bill, and any changes must be analyzed carefully with accurate data based on costs rather than salaries of arbitrators' decisions. We're concerned that the districts eligible for under the Hold Harmless Clause, especially in the area of the heavy impact that they will experience 3 years from now when that Hold Harmless Clause ends, going from 70% to zero. Additionally, we feel the 4 mil local effort should be a true effort on the part of city and boroughs rather than in-kind tuition or other compromises used to meet the local requirement. We would support the adjustment of the 5.5 mil ceiling to 6 mils to help in that effort. It's our feeling that some cash carryover for unique and emergency needs is sound business management. Consequently, we would recommend the limit of carryover to be adjusted from 5% to 10%. In conclusion, we would appreciate your expediting the movement of this bill through the legislature, and our membership would also appreciate that. Thank you.
Any questions? Mr. Earn, any questions? Thank you.
Postscript to that, Steve McPeters, who represents us as our executive director, is putting together a position paper that deals more specifically with the areas that I was talking about, and he will be distributing that within the day, tomorrow.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Larry Beans.
Chairman, members of the committee, senators. My name is Larry Beans. I represent St. Mary's School District. I'm the vice president. Board chairman, Laura Poplin could not make it down. So on her behalf and on behalf of St. Mary's School District, greetings. St. Mary's School District is very concerned about funding for its educational programs. School district in the past has been very conservative. Currently, teacher and administrator salaries and benefits are among the lowest of any school district within the region. Revenue from interest income has been reserved for use in programs expansion at the time St. Mary's Catholic High School is closing its doors. It appears that St. Mary's is being penalized for saving its money. Senate Bill 119 would reduce state funding to St. Mary's by 45% over a three-year period. At the same time, it would reduce the fund balance to $95,000 at the time when those funds are needed most due to the June closure of the private school. St. Mary's is proud of its first-class city status. For 20 years, the people of the city have exercised local control and assumed responsibility of their status, taxing themselves as needed to make programs work. Senate Bill 119 is not encouraging to small rural cities or boroughs. This bill needs some modification to make it workable. Attached are various concerns which, if addressed, would make this a more equitable piece of legislation. We would be happy to provide more information on each concern if you so desire. Some of the concerns regarding Senate Bill Section 1417.025C, local effort. Interest earnings are limited to a maximum of 5.5 mil equivalent, quote, in accordance with regulations adopted by this department, close quote. That clause leaves excess interest earnings in limbo. What can the district use the funds for? Is the district going to be penalized for exercising good cash management? Second, are students going to be penalized because interest income does not fit into a formula? Clarification of how excess interest funds can be used needs to be an integral part of the bill. School districts that maintain effective cash management techniques should be able to reap those rewards rather than be penalized. Section 1417.031B, allowable instructional units. This whole harmless provision is based solely on changes in the total number of elementary and secondary instructional units rather than the change in the dollar value of those units. This does not equate to a whole harmless of 90% of the funding. Section 1417.041, elementary and secondary instructional units. The new formula has diminished the base value of all unit categories of 3 units. The net effect of this is that small rural communities receive a greater reduction than larger communities. A community with 100 students is reduced from 16 units to 13 units, a 19% reduction, while a community of 500 students is reduced from 43 units to 40 units, a 7% reduction. In other words, those that are small get cut nearly 3 times more than a district 5 times larger, and the ratio increases even more as the size of the decrease of the district increases. Section 1417.051, area cost differential. The apparent method used in ascertaining the area cost differential is not reflective of the differences in cost of operating a school district. The McDowell report was based on cost of living for individuals in certain geographic areas. The cost of living of an individual is quite different from a school district. Likewise, those costs have changed in the last 4 years. The cost differentials currently listed are reflective only of that portion of the district's budget that is made up of salaries and wages. The balance, anywhere from 30 to 60% of the budget, is supply, travel, and plant operations. Isolation factors are much more reflective of those differences found in those areas and these costs. A combination of factors is related to the percent of average budget needs to be used to calculate area differential. It is crucial for this to be done. Otherwise, there will never be equity within the distribution formula. Section 1417.082, fund balance. The first thing that needs to be clarified is the definition of the fund balance. A clear definition will result in the calculation that will mean the same thing in every school district audit. In the past, school districts and auditors had so much discretion that it is not possible to accurately compare fund balances. Second, school districts that receive an appropriation from a city or borough should treat the full amount appropriated as an obligation of the city or borough. Unexpended obligations should not lapse back to the city or borough, therefore leaving the school district with no fund balance. If we want to compare fund balances, we should make sure that everyone is playing by the same rules. Third, there are very valid reasons for having a fund balance. In the past, most school districts were allowed a 10% fund balance. Suddenly, that number has been dropped to 5%. In small school districts, 10% is more realistic than 5%. And in a case can be made for retaining a balance even greater than 10%. A district can accurately budget for most everything other than utilities, equipment failure, and catastrophes. The cost of utilities is dependent on weather conditions. Equipment failure and catastrophic events that are not insurable cannot be accurately budgeted for without creating a fund balance at year end. Lastly, the question arises as to the propriety of the state penalizing a district for retaining what may be local funds. If a city or borough appropriates the maximum local effort allowed and expends an amount equivalent to that minimum, why can't the school district carry forward a fund balance that is made up of local dollars? The question of local control is seriously being tested. That, Mr. Chairman, is the extent of my testimony.
Thank you. I have a question. What is your mill rate in St. Mary's now for education? Because I see that your local effort amounts to $17,000 of total local effort. What's required to raise that kind of money for local effort for your school system?
The city of St. Mary's has a local city sales tax. That's 3%.
And that's for education only?
No. Local effort comes from interest earnings.
Okay, do you have a property tax for education at the same rate?
No.
Okay, so your total revenue is generated by a sales tax. You use the interest on the sales tax that you invest to pay for your local effort for schools.
Right? Yeah, portions of that.
Okay, thank you. Bob Weinstein.
Hi, my name is Bob Weinstein, I'm superintendent of Southeast Island School District. which operates 17 schools in the southern half of Southeast Alaska. I'm passing around a copy of a letter that was sent to the governor a week ago that some or most of you may have sent copies of also. Rather than go through it, I'll keep my remarks fairly brief and just speak towards the Erie differential, as that is one part of the bill that I feel is in need of some technical correction, but yet can rely upon the original data that was used to generate the Erie differentials in the proposed legislation. As most of you know, the Erie differentials are based upon an arbitrator's award, which is based upon a McDowell study completed by the state of Alaska in April of 1985. And it was used to try to establish differentials for state employees in different parts of the state based upon household consumption and expenditure patterns throughout the state. And that makes some sense for funding school districts, but there are two major areas where it doesn't make any sense. The first is in the housing category, where because of a number of reasons, the Anchorage shelter subcategory within the housing factor is the highest in the state. In fact, it's 25% higher than Fairbanks. In addition, the Wade-Hampton district and the study used 1961 House election districts for the purposes of breaking down the state into areas for its study. The Wade-Hampton district, which is St. Mary's, Ammonic, and that area, has a shelter cost of $188 a month. That also makes no sense. The study in the housing category gives, in my opinion, too much weight to the shelter subcategory, which is skewed by some unique factors affecting Anchorage and some apparently unique factors, possibly subsidies, affecting that one district. So in my recommendation, I suggested eliminating the high and the low factors, which tend to skew the housing category and thus skew the whole Erie differentials which are being proposed. The second factor that I'm recommending an adjustment of is the transportation index that was used. It's largely driven by the price of a round-trip ticket from the study district to Seattle. Again, I don't feel that that has much basis for driving school district area cost differential when most of our travel was in district and certainly within the state, not between the school districts and Seattle. So my recommendation for that is to bring any district whose index was less than one up to the base of one, which is equivalent to Anchorage. With those two changes on the appendix, which is the last page, is a set of proposed Erie differentials for your consideration. And I would like to stress that they are based, with those two exceptions, upon the data and the methodology contained in that study. I think that if you look at the changes that are proposed, with some exceptions, perhaps they make a good deal of sense when you look at the cost of living, the cost of school district doing business around different parts of the state. I don't think that an analysis of the changes will show that any increase is excessive or for some reason out of line. I have footnoted on the next to the last page a couple districts that may bear some individual attention due to being in perhaps the incorrect study district, but again, an area of the state that perhaps I have no personal knowledge of.
That's thank you. Thank you. Your main area is area differential. The rest of it you're saying seems to be okay.
Yes, I think the funding bill is a vast improvement over current statute from a school finance point of view. It corrects what I believe are some major problem areas that might subject the state to some litigation. I do have some other areas in the letter. I've had some discussions with the Department of Education, and I feel that in large part they're prepared to deal with some of those other recommendation, so I don't need to take your time at this point.
I guess I'm not familiar with your area. Do any of the people pay any taxes at all or any effort at all locally towards your schools, or is it totally state and federal?
It's state and federal, where our communities are logging and fishing through fish tax and logging corporate taxes. I believe they make a significant contribution to the state.
Okay, but there's no quote, local effort in the sense you're not paying any kind of sales tax or anything?
It's the unorganized borough, okay. So there is no sales tax specifically for school district operation.
Any questions? Okay, thank you. Carol Huntington? Carol Huntington? No? Oh, I'm sorry. Did say no on here.
Wait, I got it.
Okay, then everybody else had said no. So Tom Wagner's available if we have any questions as to law. Anybody else that wants to, from the audience, care to express any kind of testimony at this time or not? Okay, if not, Larry, how about you and some of the folks from DOE, Commissioner, just come up and maybe some of these questions that we're asked, we could at least see how it would affect the overall structure. So why don't you just come up to the table and circle around. Don't worry about these things. We're not in teleconference. Senator Cotulla?
Has he ever gone through with the committee a section of this bill?
Yes. Well, the one presentation that was made, and the chair found it to be one of the most enlightening of any, they went through the effects, most of it, and they provided the chart showing how it affects each district. I thought it was a very good presentation about, I guess, 2 weeks ago. So, we can, if you have a particular section, because I have some questions, too, where people are wondering about definitions, and maybe we could get into that. But I'm going to let some of you folks ask the questions first, if you have any. While you're thinking, Larry, you heard the testimony so far. Is there anything that you feel that had come up that you could relate to now so that we can scratch them off our list?
There are a great many issues brought up, and at this point, I believe it would be better to take individual concerns. I have no particular comments to make at this time.
Okay, maybe I can start off with the one comment was a phase-in of the TRS and over a four-year period, and it wasn't said whether it should be 25% per year or whatever. Have you addressed that at all as to a phase-in versus 100% all at once?
There's been no discussion, to my knowledge, on phase-in of the TRS.
Okay, so in reality, if it were to be phased into 25, 25, 25, it would mean that 75% of what's in the foundation unit now, if it's only limited money, would have to be pulled out and used for the TRS anyhow, assuming there is no more money, or it would have to find it somewhere else.
It's approximately, I believe the figure is $23 million of the 428 that's presently in the bill that was placed there for the TRS. And so there would have to be a percentage change, as you outlined, to which would lower the dollar per unit in order to shift that money out of the foundation program.
Another question, that one had this carryover from 5%, 10%, or whatever. In the past, what happened if it was over 10% when we had the 10% limit? What happened if they had to carry over 15%?
It wasn't any action taken as far as any removal of dollars. There is a report made only. The current statute has the percentage limitations on the full amount of the fund balance, which, as discussed through the superintendent's group, school boards groups, and others, we felt was not a legitimate percentage, and that a share of the fund balance is a reserved fund balance, which can be for those areas where there are expenditures tied to and a share of the fund balance. And so the revision to the bill was to reduce the percentage, but to apply it only to the unreserved section. So the percentage has been reduced to 5, but it applies to only the unreserved portion of the fund balance, which is that portion which does not have a legal expenditure authorization behind it. So the concept was to try to remove out of that section of the law those areas which should not be subject to the restriction, in that, in essence, they are already expended.
I have a question, then. It goes a little differently. I thought the purpose of equalization was to try to make it that children in our state get basically the same kind of minimum education. What would the effect be if the legislature were to say, and I know we're talking $60,000 a unit, but suppose the legislature would say a district shall pay no more than $100,000 a unit, what would that do statewide? In other words, to make sure at the other end it's just not going way out and can do everything in the world for the kids, and yet we in the middle are caught that even if the local people say we're willing to tax for our schools, they can't tax. What would the effect be if there would be a cap of $100,000 per unit that a district can't spend more than?
I would answer that two ways. The first has to do with the PL 874 federal criteria to which this bill is largely addressed, which would say that within the restrictions or within the criteria within those PL 874 restrictions, and by that I mean I'm excluding, in accordance with the federal guidelines, 5% of the students on either end of the spending continuum. Those restrictions would say at a $60,000 base, you could not have more than a $75,000 per unit expenditure, because the $15,000 over the $60,000 represents 25%. That, however, leaves out the extremes where the 5% of the students are, and in the state of Alaska, that represents the Valdez and the North Slope Borough districts, where their expenditures per unit exceed the $75,000 per unit. And by federal regulation, there is no limit at that point. And so what you would state, if the state would put on that limit, then the state would have an external limit beyond the federal criteria of saying, regardless of federal criteria, which would restrict expenditures to $75,000 per unit, the state would restrict expenditures further to 100, in your example. Now, whether or not that would restrict the expenditures of those two school districts under FY 88 projections, I would have to run those calculations.
Is it permissible or mandatory that you have to exclude? You say the 5% at each end is permissive, which means that the state then can set separate criteria, can it not?
The state could have less than a 25% disparity, excluding the 5% at either end, but it could not have more to meet the criteria. So it is permissive to exclude the 5%. In Alaska, given our present funding means, it is mandatory that we exclude those two, or we would have severe reductions on the Valdez and the North Slope Borough School Districts.
I guess, you know, from looking at it, it just doesn't seem from an equitable point of view that in some cases you say you folks can't, even if you vote in a tax, you cannot give more for local education than this. And yet at the other extreme, where the tax base is so ungodly high, they could keep the mill rate very, very low, and still, I think at the North Slope is something like $17,000 per ADM. And yet these other districts are limited to $6,500, $7,000. It just doesn't, if the feds are really talking equity, they ought to look at that maybe a little bit more. Right?
The federal definition of equity is in terms of an amount of inequity. And the amount of inequity is determined by 25%. So what you say is true.
Okay, then I know there's some people that want to amend it. This came up to the mill rate equivalency. The bill says 5.5, and the feeling is that it should be 6. There's no problem there, right?
We could go to 6 mills. One other concept just came up in a discussion this morning that has not been fully discussed, but it treats the same area, and that's for those districts who are presently putting in more than 5.5 or perhaps 6, would be to put the cap on the dollars per unit of revenue or expenditure and not on the number of mills. The Fairbanks School District raised a concern that even at 6 mils, they are more or less borderline in what their projections could be on receipt of revenues from the local source. We have looked at the bill, and the bill is written at a cap on mils. We have talked about going to 6 mils. The reason for the 6 mils is that the Anchorage School District, having omitted the North Slope Borough and Valdez School Districts, the Anchorage School District has a disparity at that point of approximately $13,000 per unit, or to put it in other words, their revenues would be approximately $73,000 per unit. That $73,000 divided by the $60,000 represents a difference or disparity of approximately 21%. We could perhaps state, and this was the issue raised, that the cap would be not on 6 mils, but on a $13,000 per unit disparity, which would allow some districts to have a greater millage because, in essence, they are poorer districts, property-wise, and it takes a higher millage to raise that amount of money. Again, it's local discretion at this point. Anything over 4 mils would become local up to a maximum cap of $1 per unit. But looking at the same issue, it could just be placed perhaps on $1 per unit value rather than a mil cap.
How would that, I hate to put you on the spot, Sir, but your letter today, it indicated that the Mat-Su is 7-point-something mils. Is that just for education equivalency? So then how would that affect the Mat-Su area if they're up that high already and you stick in a dollar amount? I mean, they're still going to be more than what you're proposing, would they not?
I believe that would alleviate, if not resolve completely, that issue that in Mat-Su, they could effectively raise about 3.4 mils over the 4, or go to 7.4, and to get to the $13,000 per unit cap, because in Mat-Su, a relatively poor property district measured on a dollar per unit amount, it takes more mils to raise the same dollars. So this would permit the Mat-Su borough to have an equivalent of 3.4 mils beyond the 4 before it reached the $13,000 cap, using that as an example. And I believe that would largely resolve the issue in the Mat-Su county.
Doug, for the local taxpayer, as you point out, we have a bedroom community that most of our taxes are enhanced by virtue of the good old North Slope and Marco and so on. They keep telling me how much they're doing. We're increasing my tax for the bedroom community, right? But you're right. I too think that this is the first real attempt to make some sense of the solution problem that we requested you address some years back, between times that you were commissioner. I do have a serious problem, though, one. Do you wish me to have the floor?
Sure, go ahead while we're on this topic.
Back to Valdez, and Representative Cato's been here, and she and I have discussed this with the Valdez people. And on page 6, we're suggesting the amendment here to take care of, and here it is, Mr. Hutzel and Commissioner. We're suggesting the amendment to take care of a problem that we have an age differential here. As you see on page 6, line 4, I believe it is, we're requesting that an amendment be placed that says, insert point 1, instructional units for a student of any age. If the student attends a school that offers services exclusively developmental disabled students. Now, Valdez has a problem for $400,000 or $500,000 a year worth. The problem supply school services to the disadvantaged, mentally disadvantaged there, and they're at varying ages. Representative Cato full well knows she's taught there, and she knows how long that program has been covered by our foundation program, but it's been covered for about 20 years, or about from the time of the initiation of the foundation program. And I don't see how the community can be expected, or we can justify losing that as
a support for that particular institution that happens to be statewide institution that resides in Valdez. I think we need an amendment in there to resolve that. Realize that the formulators have been in some serious debate with other members of the delegation on this, but I don't think there's any equity to expecting the local community to pay for that support for these people. That in fact it takes years and years and years to give them 1 year of instruction. But in fact they are trainable and they're slowly educable. And it is not totally therapeutic, it's partly educational. I don't know if Representative Kayle wishes to contribute to this.
Representative Kayle?
It's highly educational. There are 11 teachers involved. When I taught there in 1969, I taught at the special school, which at that time was now evolved into special school. At that time it was called School Within School. And it has been funded through the educational formula since 1968. Now all of a sudden jumps out and grabs us.
Might I suggest that this issue was just brought to my attention within the past couple of days, and I've been aware of it going on, I guess, but kind of forgotten about it. It would seem to me that maybe another way to approach it would be through an amount of money that it would take to run the program, and set that money aside into the contract schools for the handicapped. That might be a little easier way to make sure that the state is properly paying for the educational services. In other words, for the state to enter into a contract with the school district and just pay for the cost of those services, not trying to figure out whether or not an index tied to the instructional unit computation. Do it. I think it would be cleaner and easier to consider funding it under the contract.
I think in times of the income level that sort of supports basic state services statewide, that you're right. But in declining times, that may sit up like a sore thumb. And I'm worried that it not be in the formula itself in some reasonable fashion, even though it complicates it. It's a political concern of mine, not for the present so much as for the future when we go back through these valleys and dips of state support. I'm a bit worried that since we've had it this period, since we have the problem, I personally like to see a formula solution if it's at all possible, for the reason I've stated.
I can appreciate that. Maybe the approach would be if you give us some time to see what kind of an index to attach to the instructional unit so that we reward the district for the, as close as possible to what it actually costs them.
Sure, that's all we're talking about. And so, if it comes down for everybody and that comes down too, so be it. But we just can't afford this type of deletion. I understand Senator Fisher is going to wait another time for these amendments to be suggested formally anyway, so I hope that you could, Commissioner, have a look at that. I appreciate that. Again, I do have to commend you for the efforts. Nothing is perfect, but I think you're on a roll of some responsibility, as has been analyzed by most of the districts, and what's come back to me has been positive in my work here.
Larry, I have a question. The $13,000 cap, that's based because of Anchorage's situation. Could you have a run out if that $13,000 cap were applied to all the districts as to what the maximum local effort would be from each district so that they could look at it? Now, I'm concerned in one case about the Kenai Peninsula, too, where they fit in this particular scheme as to are we in that area, what's our limit? Because there is talk of school board trying to get an extra $3 million out of this year. I'm out of the borough assembly, and I'm not so sure if somebody is that anxious to do it. And it might be under the $13,000 cap, maybe the assembly can take the position, we'd love to do it, but the feds say no.
In the Kenai borough, based upon the figures that we have on 100% full and true value and the projections that were made for fiscal year 88, the borough could go to 2.48 mils beyond the 4, or 6.48 mils.
Okay, maybe I can figure it out later, but if you can somehow give me, since you have all that stuff there, the dollar amount, like it's 15 million, I guess, now, but can they go to 18, 20, or whatever? That's what that's just a little special thing. Another comment I have, since we have superintendents and school board members there, that
One of my concerns about this whole bill is creativity by school administrators. And that is, there's always a way they find around everything. And I'm going to really watch it close. So I, for one, I'm tired of seeing people getting credit for gifted and talented, handicapped, and all these various things that have a special category, and you people craft, you know, you're a little crafty at times, and you kind of fit those people in there for additional revenue. And I think we need to really watch it. I know correspondence a while back was terrible. I mean, there was a great, I called it profit being made by having kids in your district put in the correspondence program because you were getting more for other programs. And I would hope that we keep this thing, because we're not addressing that, but I would hope that you really make the effort not to get too creative with these kids and not double count them, triple count them, or whatever. And I would hope the department really follows up on that to make sure that those that have the talent in that area don't usurp the whatever. That's my little personal.
We should have fired our superintendent. He never showed that much talent.
Any other comments or questions by any of the committee members? I want to commend, too, the department. I think it is it's probably one of the better starts. And I would hope that when we meet again that all of a sudden the lid doesn't blow off and all of a sudden nobody's happy. But we'll take into consideration all the amendments that were offered. And school districts out there that still feel they want to get their 2 cents in, just drop us a note. And we're going to just have a list of things we're going to go through. But it's good to see that at least one group at this point says that they're satisfied with it, and that's the school administrators. And I don't know where the state school board has taken a position. Does anybody know? Maybe they haven't had a chance to look at it yet.
The school administrators support it. It worries me all over again.
Are there any other questions? We'll take this bill up again, hopefully within a week or 10 days, because I met with the governor. He wants to see it move to, or get the thing out. And it does go to finance from here, so we'll have another review. With that, thank everybody. Thank you.